The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Thanks for joining us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Fascinating interviews and compelling conversations. Be present. The Diane Ray Show.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Thanks for joining me. I'm Diane Ray, and thanks for being present and checking in with me today. I'm excited about the show. This is going to be great because I'm a big reader. I mean, if you could see my messy office, I actually posted a picture of my office not too long ago. There's books stacked up everywhere. I'm always in the middle of reading something. And I've been rereading a book that had been out for a little while before called The Celestine Prophecy. A lot of you will remember this. Every once in a while, a book will come along that captures people's imaginations about what can be possible for our lives and for humanity as a whole. And my guest today, James Redfield, has written such a book, The Celestine Prophecy. It's been so much fun to go back and reread this. I had read it, you know, years ago, and it was just so great to dive back into it again. The book was originally published in 1993, and this is one of those books that's been passed around from friend to friend, and it's become a spiritual classic. It's a great adventure story, as well as a book to open you up to a new world of insight, synchronicity, and human evolution. And the book's been re-released, so I urge all of you to dive back into it again or read it for the first time. And it's got a new afterword on how to discover your own Celestine experience. So I've spent the past few days doing that. And I'm really happy to welcome the author today, James Redfield, to the show to talk about it. So James, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you. Nice to be with you.
Well, it's nice that you could check in. So I just wanted to kind of give the listeners a little bit of a frame of reference. You know, from the time frame that the book was first written, you know, this was pre-9/11, you know, pre the recession of 2008, and you were working as a therapist and administrator in the field of social services. So I just wanted you to kind of bring us back to that time. What was going on with you in your life at that time, and what sparked you to write the book?
Well, you know, I was a therapist working with teenagers and their families. And but I was always I had been for a long time a fond advocate of the human potential movement, and as you know, that was happening in the 70s and 80s, and it was a kind of intellectual and maybe even scientific approach to, you know, what are the key spiritual / psychological experiences that we can have in terms of finding our dream life, finding what we want to do in life. And I, at that time, was thinking about writing, and I realized that there were 9 steps that I think were out there in the literature. It sort of was permeating into society at large, and these steps were kind of the steps to enter into a more creative consciousness and turn into all the abilities that we have to create in this world. And so I really wanted to do a kind of psychology of spirituality, you know, kind of book at first, and then I figured, and I found that, you know, that just was born with me. It was just conceptual and academic, and I just put that away, and what I did was try to create a story instead based on my experiences and other people's experiences that I thought were on the leading edge at that point. And so I created this book, my first book, and it was a prophecy, but it was also a journey for the reader that took them through the 9 insights or steps that I believe were already out there in the world, that people could move into and tap into in terms of, moving into a higher consciousness and in a more fulfilling life. So, yeah, I finished that book and got it out there and became, as you know, a pass-along book. So not much that we did or the publisher did, but it just, I think what happened was it crystallized what people were experiencing, these deep experiences that people were having, and it kind of brought into self-awareness what everybody was feeling. And so it just went everywhere. You know, it started off just in all the more spiritually oriented bookstores, but then it crossed over in the mainstream. It was in 5 or 6 countries, just because people were passing it along across the world. So it wound up being translated into 40 languages and in different alphabets. I mean, that's the story spoke to people at a level they were ready to understand, and that's how to live a fulfilled life. And I think it's fun to be traveling around now talking about it again, because there are two new generations that are passing around to each other, and that makes a lot of fun.
I'm having a hard time hearing you, so I apologize for that for the listeners, but maybe we can get a little bit of a better connection as we go to the break. But you were talking about, you know, people revisiting this book again, and it has been passed around from, friend to friend. I mean, it was interesting when I first posted about I was going to be talking with you and about the book, and I got a lot of response from people messaging me and saying, oh, I love this book. This book changed my life. And so people really have a warm place in their heart and in their lives for some of the ideas that this book raised, you know, well over 20 years ago. And what I thought was interesting in the afterword that you write, there's a new chapter at the end of the book that's really interesting. I want people to check that out. And you said that you feel that the book has been waiting for the millennial generation to arrive and discover it. And do you think that now is kind of an opportune time for people to revisit some of the ideas and get a refresher?
Yeah, what I think is that millennials are they're kind of unifiers, and they also want to move past abstractions about life in general or spirituality, and they want to really know how to live something. How does it feel? How do we do it? How do we experience growth and opening to consciousness? And I think they're asking those detailed questions right now. And it's in my view, it's sort of bringing the whole, the 9 steps down to earth, so that they're, I'm talking about them more practically. People are, the feedback I get is that what we're doing is integrating these steps into our lives. And in the book, in the afterword that I talked about, in the new edition, I really talk about how we're moving from insight, just the kind of aha about it, about life at a higher level, and seeing that these insights are really new abilities to be more creative in the world. And the first one is probably the first insight or ability. Is the one that was most popular, and it's the discovery of the awareness of synchronicity. These experiences of meaningful coincidences that happen and that seem kind of destined in one's life, and it takes you, gives you information at just the right time to take your life in an inspired direction, and this experience or perception of synchronicity was, that was coined by Carl Jung, the famous protege of Freud, the first humanistic psychologist, I think. But it was that concept, the idea that there's a force in the world that helps bring us information and
opportunities at just the right time if we key into those, into that synchronicity and adopt these other abilities or insights, so that the synchronicity goes faster, and we find more opportunities to break through what's holding us back and move into a kind of flow of life that takes us to a more fulfilled place.
And it kind of starts there, right? The awareness of the synchronicities. But first, I want to talk a little more about that, but don't move wherever you are, because I'm hearing you a lot better now. So just stay there, okay, wherever you are.
Okay,
but with synchronicity, I love this topic because, and I was just reading something about this again on social media, where I think people are becoming a little bit more aware of that and to be open to those synchronicities happening in life. I was just reading, a friend of mine posted that she was just going through this really horrible day yesterday and was feeling, you know, awful, and drove through a drive-thru of some random fast food place and just wanted a Diet Coke. So as she drove through the window, the woman just said, you know, "Oh, here, honey, this is for you," just like a really sweet voice, and gave her this free, you know, Diet Coke. And she kind of went on her way, almost like just an angel saying, you know, this is okay. And she said she just got this realization that this was like a message for her. It's going to be okay, even though it was just a random person at a fast food place giving her a Diet Coke. But she was aware, like more aware of that, being open to those synchronicities. And I love hearing those kind of stories. And I love synchronicities because I've been trying to be more open to those things happening in my life. And I think that's a powerful part of the book.
Yeah, it's the key part of the book. And the rest of the book, and again, it's a story about how one individual finds these insights. So it's an adventure story and a lot of fun. But the insights themselves make this, the synchronistic flow you can find in your life. It's really how to build this synchronistic flow in your life that can, and realize at a higher level what you really want to do with your life in the world. And so we could go through the insights if you want, or we can just talk about a few of them.
Yeah, we'll kind of talk about a few of them. I have some questions here based on just rereading the book. And you're right, it is a fun read. I want people to know that too. It has these kind of, you know, heavy concepts, but it's wrapped in an adventure story that is a lot of fun to read. You know, it's set in Peru. And did you travel to Peru before writing the book? Or have you been back and forth a lot?
Well, for a number of years, yeah, I went there quite a bit because it's such a beautiful and mysterious place. You know, it's a place that just kind of reeks of the mysteries of life. And, you know, that I had a lot of experiences personally there. So that's why I thought that would be the natural setting. But the thing about the book is that it takes the reader through each of these insights. And, the stream is really becoming aware of all the full spiritual landscape of our lives, and the first two are really trying to get oriented toward what are the laws of this universe, you know, what are their principles. And certainly the second and the third insights are fun, because the second insight was really a redefinition of history, showing that the world is going somewhere. The human journey is all purposeful and has always been filled with heroes that have listened to their synchronicities and come to a truth or a work that has changed the world for the better. So that's really, and they've let themselves be guided into finding this work or this mission that they can accomplish in life, you know, and And that's key. You know, we're all here to do something, and it's the mystery is finding out what that is and letting ourselves to be guided into it.
So you do feel that we are all here for a reason, and that makes sense. But let me ask you, do you think that everything happens for a reason? Because sometimes I have a hard time with that concept when you look around and you see random horrible things that happen that seem to have no meaning. You know, like, why did that particular tragedy or event happen? So what do you think about that? Do you think that we assign reason to events, or that there are reasons for particular things happening?
Well, I think, you know, I think that the world still, the human world is still imperfect. And most of the terrible things that happen are still because we aren't living life. We haven't learned then humanity hasn't learned exactly the perspective that has to happen to live, you know, to hear those premonitions and intuitions that keep us out of trouble. But we're learning that. And I think that we're really coming to a place where what we can find is that some events are just events, and we can find meaning in those, but there are other events that are true synchronicities that are opening a door for us to move into a new work or new attitude or a life free of a problem that has held us back, and ultimately to a remembering of our mission.
Right. No, I'm a big believer in signs and synchronicities, and I love to look for them. And I think that, and actually you talk about that in the book too, the more that you're aware and open to them, the more that they show up and the more signs and synchronicities that you get. So I love when those across my path.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. So we do, go ahead.
No, I was just going to offer one more insight. The third insight is the insight of realizing there's a karmic structure to life, and you know, we've heard about karma, forever, and different philosophical and religious traditions have their own description of that. But I believe that I think anybody can prove to themselves that the real karmic structure is one of giving. And when we really look to help people and be helpful in general, what happens is that we draw into our lives, you know, there's a kind of gravity that happens in which we draw into our lives people who help us. So how we are is sort of reflective of who we draw into our lives, the people that come through our lives. And if you're a taker, you know, if you're in any way manipulative or deceitful, if you sell people things that you know they don't need because, you know, it helps you, if you think about any kind of deception or manipulation, if you misuse people in any way, then you draw into your life the people that do that exactly the way you do it, or very close. And because you draw takers, but it's not as punishment. It's to show you that that behavior hurts other people. You know, it's revealed to you through this process. So it's all designed for the ultimate, you know, utopian world that we'll get to, where everybody's a giver, and when everybody's giving, and that means money and treasure, but also helpfulness in action. But if we could get to a place where everybody was doing that, then there would be enough giving to take care of every problem on the planet. So that's again something that I believe people are coming to. And if you just talk to people that know nothing about, in particular, about spiritual growth or that kind of thing, they'll tell you what comes around goes around. That's what they'll say. And that's just down at just basic life. We know that the people who succeed in, you know, as a mom and pop store are the people that truly take care of their people's, their customers' needs. And that gets around and more customers come. And if you don't, the opposite, I mean, just the opposite happens. So this is something people can prove to themselves, even though it's actually refreshing and encouraging that that's really how it's set up. We just have to all of us move into that structure and then
right.
be in alignment with that.
No, that's true. And I think that you see demonstrations of that whenever there's some kind of disaster or something like that. Unfortunately, that seems to be what it takes, where I think it is our innate nature to help and cooperate. Like, people will rise to the occasion and help, you know, if there's a disaster or a fire or something like that. We shouldn't be pushed to that. I don't think we should want to really do it. But I do think that it is really in our makeup. And I've also read, too, that, you know, the old theories of survival of the fittest and that kind of thing, it's really what's caused species to survive was cooperation, not so much taking over and conquering of the other, but the species that cooperate and work together are the ones that thrive. So maybe we need to take a look at that a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, listen, that insight alone will change your life. I mean, because if you concentrate on just giving of time, and I mean, most people do anyway, but to really concentrate on that as a you know, as a kind of experiment, if nothing else, anybody can prove to themselves that they draw more givers into their lives, and their lives go easier, and more synchronicity happens because more people show up who are there to give you information. And you know, it's all set up. You know, the world is set up for that to happen. We're just only now really moving into it, I think.
Right. Well, we have about 5 minutes until the break, but I do have a caller here since we're live, live on
sure.
the air. So let me grab our caller before the break, and let's go to line 2. And Heather calling from Austin, Texas. And Heather, welcome to the show.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, Diane. Hi, James.
Hi.
How
are you?
Wow. What an honor to speak to you. I have to say, I'm one of those people that told Diane this book changed my life. So I am really honored to be speaking to you.
Well, it's really fun to be here. And I love it when people have gotten something from the book. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you. I do have a question. So I would have to say the third insight in the first book, they visit a garden, and there are people who are able to see a type of energy with the plants, and they sort of see that humans can contribute and add their goodwill or their good intentions to those plants. And I have to say that my whole life has been about that. And I'm a gardener for a living. I sometimes think I feel like I maybe have more friends that are flowers and trees and plants than people, but I do have a lot of people friends too. But I have a question for you about this sort of energy exchange. And so first I want to ask
yes.
you, is it based on a real place? Did you go someplace that was like that garden?
Yes, I did.
Was it
in
Peru? There.
That's right.
Ah, because I thought maybe it was Stindhorn or Damanhur. So I was really curious if there is a community like that. So I would love
yeah,
to visit. Do you know that this exists?
Well, there was a community like that.
It
turned into seeds and blew different to other places, and you know, the Findhorn was one of the places that got fed by this the group that I'm talking about. But you know, there are groups like this all over the place, and in practicing giving. You know, I mean, they maybe everybody doesn't see auras. You know, it's auric energy, and you know, it's that you see in giving like that. But you know, that's an absolutely real process. You know, when you give energy, the field of the other person energizes, gets larger because you're adding your energy to it. And and then if they're doing the same thing, you know, they turn around and consciously, you know, look at you and sending energy. It's really sending regard. It's sending love in a real sense. But what happens is the two people doing that, they can just build energy, and that's that solves a lot of problems in communication. If you know, there are a lot of control dramas out there, you know, in the human world now. Not as many though, but they're still out there, and power struggles happen. And but just giving, and two people, especially giving to each other, really solves that issue.
Hey, Diane, this sounds like Denise's book, Energy Strands, right? Between two people, the
it
energy
does.
Going back and forth. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's so interesting. Wait, hold on, Heather. We're gonna go to a break, but I want you to stay because this was the direction I was gonna go into, asking about the energy fields in the next segment. So hang on, okay?
Awesome. Okay.
I'm gonna put you on hold. We'll be right back. And I want all the listeners to stay as well. We're going to continue our conversation with James Redfield, revisiting the Celestine Prophecy.
Practical spirituality. Positive messages. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
It takes you to power Unity Online Radio. If you'd like to make a positive difference in the world, you can by contributing to this global ministry. Unity Online Radio relies on listeners like you to support our broadcasts that send our messages out to an awakening world. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate today.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment with Eric Butterworth, taken from the live lecture, A Course in Practical Metaphysics.
Emily Cady, in her Lessons in Truth, makes a statement which I think we need to kind of think about a little bit. She says, God is not a being with qualities or attributes, but he is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, wisdom, etc. He is the good itself coming into expression as life, love, power, and wisdom. In other words, and this again is shattering to some of us, God is not loving. God is a loving God. God is not loving. Because the moment we talk about God as loving, we've got the anthropomorphic Michelangelo-like God sitting up in a crowd somewhere with his heart beaming out, saying, oh, I love you all down there, see you so dearly, as long as you're good. But I'm not going to love you very much if you don't go to church and so forth. God is not loving. God is love.
To find out more about Eric Butterworth, visit unity.org.
Join Travel with Unity 2020 for a transformational trip to Rome and the Amalfi Coast, March 26th to April 4th, and explore the culture, myths, and spiritual significance of southern Italy. You'll experience the history of the ancient ruins of Pompeii, visit the Vatican, and spend time on the beautiful Amalfi Coast during this 10-day tour. Just 40 seats are available and space is limited, so reserve your trip before September 15th. Go to unity.org/travel for more information today.
Since 1924, Daily Word has offered inspiration and practical teachings through daily prayer messages to help people of all faiths live happy, healthy lives. The magazine includes 2 months of daily affirmations, messages, articles, and spiritual poetry to help you get inspired. Subscriptions are available for print editions in large type and Spanish, as well as the digital subscription package that includes the online magazine with audio, smartphone app, and daily email. Get your subscription today. Visit dailyword.com or unity.org.
More and more people are interested in a vegan lifestyle, and the numbers continue to grow. Join Victoria Moran every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central for Main Street Vegan and learn how to make the shift to help animals and the planet. Each week, Victoria shares recipes, health tips, and interviews with celebrity vegans, experts, and activists. Learn how to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Right here on Unity Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
Welcome back to Be Present, the Diane Ray Show.
Thanks for staying with me through the break. I'm Diane Ray. Welcome back to the show. We're having a great conversation here with author James Redfield, revisiting the Celestine Prophecy after 25 years, just a spiritual classic, a book that's been passed around from family to family, friend to friend, and is so fun to revisit and still really relevant today. I really love the story. And before the break, we were talking with our caller, Heather, from Austin, Texas, about one of the insights that James discusses in the book. And so I wanted Heather to finish her question talking about energy and an exchange of energy. So let's bring her back.
Hi, Diane.
There she Hello. Is. Thanks for holding on, Heather,
Hi.
Through the break. Can you
Sure.
hear me? Hi.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, so, Heather, I'm glad you brought this up. He is here.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Yeah. So, Diane, I was mentioning that you had another guest with another book that we both love called Energy Strand, and it speaks about that connection between people, how this energy can flow back and forth. But with my world really being about, I had written one manuscript, James, about kind of not so much how we garden, but why we garden and like the seasons of our lives, how they correlate with what we do in gardens. Because I always find myself coaching people about their lives when I'm talking to them about their gardens. But anyway, so the new work I'm working on is more about how like our bodies are affected by what we consume and what we look at and what we listen to. And so I wanted to ask you specifically with this third insight and your beautiful, what is a true story about this garden in Peru where this energy is flowing back and forth in humans. I don't know, and plants, I don't know if you feel like, you know, now veganism is a lot more prevalent or at least a lot more awareness of a plant-based diet, people drinking juices, understanding there's like vitality in plants. But I also believe there is consciousness in plants and that we have to like acknowledge or eventually move toward acknowledging that there is that same energy exchange that might go on between two people of good intention and bad intention, but it also goes on with plants. And so I wondered if you could speak about that.
Sure. I'm one of those people who really believe plants are conscious and they bring stability. I think a lot of the good feelings that we get in an old growth forest or, a vista in mountains, the plants bring peace. They're kind of a buffer of energy where you can go out and if there are a lot of them, it's dense, and I used to hike out 2 miles in an old growth forest and camp out and meditate. If you do that, it's a special kind of meditation because what you feel is a kind of serenity and that elevates you and you take it back into the real world. Out into the busy human world with you. So I'm right there. I think they're buffers and helpers in a big way in terms of consciousness and how we can stay in a positive spiritual consciousness more of the time.
I'm reading Dr. Quinn Lee's book, Forest Bathing, right now, and he's a Japanese scientist, and he's talking exactly what you're speaking about. But I also feel like I try to coach people that, we don't all have either the availability of an old growth forest or the time to go, but I know, Diane, like, you've experienced yoga practice on the beach, or just a moment where you're walking home, or you look up in the sky, like, it's that connection with nature. You still have that opportunity, really, just in one breath, you know, to reconnect. I think it's like a portal for human beings. And what you said is so touching about giving, like nature wants to give to us. And we sometimes are so mindless in our destruction of nature that we don't realize that we're giving away the gift, the thing that we really were looking for in that destruction of nature. So I really appreciate your work. I don't want to take too much of your time, but I wonder, is there anywhere else you could send me other than Peru? information.
Well, you know, anywhere where there's a inhabitable jungle, you know, where you can, you know, there are, you know, one of the ways that we preserve these special places, these wilderness places, is that, you know, so many people now have retreats that they, you know, very thoughtfully sink into these beautiful energy places, there are just so many of them now. Costa Rica, yes, it's all over the place there. There's Mexico, you know, you have in just close flights that you can find, and you get into this real deep energy, deep forest, jungle areas that, you know, can rejuvenate you, and there you'll find a retreat there, it's a lot easier now to find places like that you know you can just dash to in a weekend, you know, at times. And but it's, you know, the one thing that you mentioned that struck a chord with me, the reason I'm out here was, you know, the reissue of the Celestine Prophecy. You know, the publisher called me and said, you know, there are two new generations passing this book around like crazy, and we want you to write an afterword about how to live this, not just, you know, reread it and have, you know, really get inspired again, but live in that inspiration. And I did some research, and it's true. You know, millennials are participating in meditation at enormous rates. There's more meditation happening in the world than ever before, ever. And because I think that millennials have, you know, they haven't engaged the world so much yet, but they're young. You know, they're young. They're just the majority of millennials are just now passing, you know, 35. So what happens at 36 and 38 is you start looking for your true work. You know, what do I really want to do with my life? And I think that surge in consciousness is happening. Also, the older millennial children are looking at college coming up really quickly, so they're asking larger questions. And then you've got baby boomers who suddenly, you know, a lot of them are retiring, and so they're thinking, well, what I want, you know, how can I leave a better legacy in the world, you know, for my children and grandchildren? So I believe what's happening is a real new time in the world where we have these multi-generations tuning into consciousness, asking the large questions, and we're doing a tour around the release of the Celestine Prophecy again, dedicated
to Austin. Austin's great. We got voted best city in the U.S. to live, right?
Well, we're on our way to Austin. We'll be in Austin before it's over, but we've got a lot of dates already set, and anybody who is interested in that can just Google the Celestine Prophecy Tour, and they'll get all the dates and where we're going to be. Because what's happening, I believe, is that millennials and their children, and also sort of re-energized baby boomers, are seeking to take these insights, take these, you know, and everybody has to remember, I didn't make these insights up. I described what was already occurring in the world, the insights that are already here for us to tap into. And I think that these multi-generations are now bringing it down to earth, bringing it down to everyday life in a larger way, so that, you know, there is a step into consciousness that include these synchronicities and the awareness of karma and this sense that we can find a meditation that works in our events. That's what we concentrate on, a new meditation that I really think works great, mindfulness meditation. And what that does is it allows you to find your peace enough so that what happens is you get in touch with your intuitive guidance. And that's what the at the core of having a synchronistic life, because we get intuitive hits about what to do, where to go. We get a intuitive hit of our ultimate maybe dream job or dream mission out there. And if we allow ourselves to be guided this way, tune in like that, what happens is that we can step into a kind of life of destiny that is the most fun we could possibly have. And so the world is still difficult, but I believe that we're finding a way to use, you know, spiritual principles to really move through life in a way that is more fun, more productive. And using our intuition, we navigate it around a lot of trouble that we might run into otherwise.
That's right. Exactly what I coach too. Hey, Dan, it's when the muddy water settles, the blossom arises, right?
That's
right. I love that quote.
All, right?
I'm looking at it right now. That's so true. I
yeah,
still kept so, it.
Yeah,
and thanks so much for the question.
Thank
you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And James, we'll be looking for you here in Austin, and I'll bring you a bunch of Gen Zers. Like, I'll bring you these 20-year-olds that are all asking me, like, they all want to grow food. They all want to meditate. I mean, there's a bunch of young kids that are very, very motivated to get into alignment with synchronicity and create a better wave for the future. So I'm optimistic about the future, and I'm really glad you're bringing this book back. Yay, you.
That's great. That's great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heather. And remember, people that are listening, go to the CelestineProphecyTour.com. Is that what people should Google, James?
Yes. That's all the information about our tour stops. And you know, what I say in interviews is, hey, if you want us to come to your location, wherever it is, with this message, plan something. Let us know.
And just to kind of bounce off a little bit on what Heather brought up, because I think she brings up a good point, even though we may think that things are so dire and in such a bad state, which it is somewhat, but the good news is that, you know, rereading the book and then reading the afterword and looking where we are now, now you're talking about the millennials, and Heather brought up that younger people are interested in these concepts and in these insights. I mean, you know, talking about energy medicine and some of the things that you bring up in the book were not readily discussed, you know, 25 years ago when you first wrote this. And actually now I have an insurance plan that covers Reiki, believe it or not, and energy medicine. And so we are, it's amazing. it's a new plan that I just signed on to, but people are taking it more seriously. It's not just kind of crazy woo-woo stuff, that they do recognize that we are made of energy and that's true. It exists.
That's right. And, you know, I have a integrative physician that, you know, uses, and a chiropractor who use a lot of energy devices now. And, you know, you just go looking for a lot of energy devices. There's a PEMF machine that's out there. A lot of people have at their disposal. It's a healing miracle. And there's just a lot. And, you know, interestingly, there's been a door opened. You know, usually the pharmaceutical companies kind of have a a control of heavy thumb on practices. But there's been an opening in this last year to be able to go out and find alternative practices that work for you, because they're allowed to talk more about it. It's funny, it came out of the Right to Try bill, but it includes other alternative medicines that the FDA cannot suppress any longer.
Right. And people are discussing more how meditation is working for them. Like, you're seeing a lot more celebrities, you know, I've heard Howard Stern, Jerry Seinfeld, a lot of people talking about how they use TM, you know, transcendental meditation, on a regular basis. So, I mean, that is one good thing that shifted from the time that you first wrote this book until now, that people are becoming more aware of the energetic world that they're living in and how it can work and how that they can tune into it. And in the new chapter that you wrote in the afterword, you offer some exercises and suggestions for people to do that. And is that something you practice regularly yourself, those
Absolutely.
Meditation exercises?
Absolutely, because meditation works. And, you know, we're multidimensional. You know, we have an ego that is kind of the whatever level of self-awareness we have and how we navigate through life. You know, those are all ego decisions. That's part of our mental makeup. But we have a whole intuitive intelligence that we're only now learning to download. And if you do both in meditation, so in meditation, it's a way to find peace, you know, and I think the best meditation is one that's heart-centered, in which you are seeking an opening of the heart based by the true emotion of authentic love, not love with an object, but love as a state. And what happens in that with that meditation is that you get a peace that, you know, all the mystics of every religion have some version of this truism, that we can find a peace within us that defies all explanation. You know, it's metaphysical. It's a spiritual opening that happens. And, you know, people are finding meditation to relax, but they're also breaking through to their, their, what I call their heart power. And that amplifies your intention. One of the steps, you know, in the afterword is to amplify your intention power. And you do that by being on the right side of karma, listening to your intuitions on what to intend, and then set this kind of prayer intention power going in your life. Now, to me, I believe about intention, we finally put all the pieces together about intention. You know, the secret, if you remember that book that came out, it broke a lot of new ground and raised questions for everything, but it didn't have all the ingredients in it. And I believe in terms of pure prayer intention based in authentic love, you know, we can create things more easily now than ever before.
Right. And you feel that these experiences, like you said, are open and available to all of us. And I know intention's very powerful. You know, Dr. Wayne Dyer, The Power of Intention. I have to mention Dr. Dyer. I love that book and his teachings, you know, and he talked about that a lot as well. And then you call this authentic spirituality. And is that what you're talking about, where that heart-centered love comes in? Is that to you an authentic
That's right.
spirituality?
That's right. You know, there are all these, and I love the human potential movement, because since Carl Jung, we've discovered really, you know, all the ingredients and all the chief experiences of spirituality, a true spirituality, authentic spirituality, not just within, I mean, it can be done within any religion. You know, that's the great part. You can grow up in any religion and you can still find all these spiritual experiences. But all the religions don't acknowledge all of the experiences. So it's a big learning curve that's bursting out there, where we finally have a spiritual operating manual for planet Earth, in my view. I mean, we really are, in my view, now with these two new generations coming on board, we're putting it something into practice that I believe has never been done before. And it's pretty awing and a lot of fun to talk about.
Oh, definitely. And some of the things that you share in the book, like in the last part of the book, the ninth insight, where they're experiencing actually being able to raise and lower vibration and to raise your vibration up to a point where you're disappearing to other people because they're not on that same level. I mean, that's pretty cool to think about. And I've also read from other authors that one in particular, Alberto Villoldo, feels that we're evolving to be homo luminous, is what he calls it, that we're going to be light beings. And that's cool to think about, too.
Well, I think that.
What do you think?
Without a doubt happening. And it, you know, that's the sort of the key revelation in the Salting Prophecy, that, you know, this idea of a rapture, you know, of humans realizing that they may think they're made out of material and stuff, but ultimately what we are made of is atoms, you know, vibrating at a certain level, and those vibrations can increase. And what happens is, I do believe that human culture will keep growing in consciousness until we will be in light bodies, and probably that will end the cycle of birth and death.
And that's cool to think about. When I try to imagine us getting to a place like that, I mean, you look at where we are now, and we still have a long way to go. But I mean, don't you think that sometimes you have to hit the bottom before you get to the top, and maybe that this is just a correction that we're going through, or a shift, and we are actually evolving to that place that you talk about in the book?
Yeah. Correction is a really good word for it, I think. I believe that, you know, right now you could, you know, our chief issue is environmental, in my view. And I mean the right next door environmental, not the climate or anything like that, so much as the amount of poisonous chemicals that are being released into the biosphere every year, and deforestation and those kinds of things, overpopulation. Those are the main issues to deal with, but and human suffering, you know, poverty and children starving in the world. You know, we have to look at that straight on while we talk about our utopian dreams, and figure out, well, what is it about this spiritual consciousness that's evolving that's going to solve all these problems? And I think, you know, frankly, I think the giving sort of foundation of this world, it's all oriented to giving. And you, if you're a giver, you know, people come and give to you. And that, if that catches on, and we start to do it with money more, helping people with money more, use the old tithing kinds of dynamics that I think anybody can prove to themselves. If you start giving money away, and what happens is that you can't outgive what comes back to you. And I think that's another thing that that people can prove to themselves. If everybody would give to the places where it needs to be given to, just 7%, not 10, 7, we could fix everything with that money. Everything. Poverty, environment, all of it. So, again, the horn I blow loudest is that, you know, if we turn human society into a giving society, so they see the power that comes from giving, the good karma, the intuitive downloads that keep you from making mistakes that make you suffer. All those things. I mean, we can intuit our way into a much more ideal life and an ideal world.
Right. No, I love that. And it's such a great way to be able to wrap up this time with you. We have just about a minute here, but you did mention that you're going to be out touring and speaking about the concepts in the book, The Celestine Prophecy. And what's the best way for people to reach you, the best website?
Well, my personal website is CelestineVision.com. And if anybody Googles James Redfield, that'll come up, or The Celestine Prophecy, that'll come up. It'll all come up. And, you know, that's how to get in touch and keep up with what we're doing. But we really want to offer the idea that there are spiritual principles that are out there that we really haven't fully implemented yet. We haven't integrated fully in our own lives or in the values of society. But if we do, at least at this point, I believe that we know what these principles are and how to do this, and that's really feels rewarding.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your vision with us, and I hope people keep on the lookout for you, James Redfield and The Celestine Prophecy. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Intuition is our spiritual GPS and the single best tool that we have for navigating our lives. I'm Victoria Shaw, and on my Intuitive Connection podcast, I will share with you the ways to connect with your intuition and awaken the gifts of your soul. In each episode, I'll draw on my own intuitive gifts and my training as an Ivy League trained counselor and psychologist to help support you in reaching your highest potential. Start listening now on Mind Body Spirit FM Podcast Network or wherever you find your podcasts.